Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Wow. And here comes the submission. And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the December 6th edition of the MMA Report podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd. Come here on this week's edition of the podcast. We are going to get you ready for Saturday's UFC 231, a tremendous lineup that's going to be taking place up in Toronto. Plus, we'll take a look back at what happened last weekend. Bellator 210, the Ultimate Fighter 28 finale, Bellator 211, and UFC Adelaide. I'm going to tell you the reasons why Michael Page versus Paul Daly is happening in the United States. We'll talk about some MMA news and notes. Greg Hardy, his UFC debut is now set. Sage Northcutt is now a one championship fighter. Plus, we've got the main event for the UFC on ESPN debut. Plus, I'm going to have four interviews for you. We're going to talk to Louis Smolka, of course, coming off that win at UFC Beijing. Also, we'll talk to Rob Font. Of course, he's going to be fighting next weekend at UFC on Fox 31, the main card, against Sergio Pettis, as Sergio moves up to 135 pounds. Also, we'll talk to Brent Primus. Of course, he is going to finally have that rematch against Michael Chandler at Bellator 212. And by the way, speaking of Michael Chandler, he'll be on next week's edition of the show. And the final interview is going to be with Kyle Bochniak, who's going to be a part of the main card on Saturday night, UFC 231, as he's going to be taking on Akeem Dawodu. Daniel, always great to chat with you. And, you know, it doesn't happen all the time. But, man, I'm looking forward to Saturday's UFC pay-per-view.
Absolutely. I am too, Jason. I feel like a lot of weeks we just get to – you know me. I love comparing everything to food. And every week we get an MMA card, but sometimes it just feels like a fast food meal. It really does. I mean, this past week, man, we had a meal from Taco Bell. We had some nice nuggets from Chick-fil-A with that Usman performance. And we had a whole lot of fast food. But I tell you what – it feels good to have a card like UFC 231, Jason. It feels like a night out, a date night at Outback Steakhouse. All right, you're going to sit down, put your elbows on the table, and enjoy a nice meal. And like you, I'm excited for it. And I'm excited, man, because this is a card, UFC 231, where I'm going to purchase this pay-per-view and not feel super guilty about it at the end of the month. I absolutely am in love with these top two fights. And I'm also looking forward to Gunnar Nelson and Oliveira.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at all the fights that are going to be on the pay-per-view, totally. I mean, yeah, I mean, look, you're right. There are some months, there's a UFC pay-per-view, you put down that $65 and you're like, oh man, I'm, you know, not feel like I'm getting my money's worth. But this one, totally. I mean, you have two high-level title fights on this one. Cowboy Oliveira and Gunnar Nelson. I thought it was interesting, Gunnar Nelson talking about basically finally lifting weights, which I was just blown away by that. I mean, Kyle Bochniak, we all remember that fight he had early this year against Magomed Sharipov. You know, I think you're going to hear from him later on. I think he's going to bring that fight to Akeem Dawodu. I think we're going to find out a lot about Akeem Dawodu in this fight, of what is that ceiling for him, a guy that's really been one of the great Canadian prospects over the past couple of years. And I mean, look, kicking off the card on pay-per-view, Jimmy Manuel and Thiago Santos. Of course, this is a fight that was supposed to take place earlier this year, man. I'm digging that fight as well. I mean, you look on the prelims. I mean, I think there's definitely some names that stick out to you. The fight that really probably sticks out to me more than anything would be the women's flyweight matchup on the TV prelims with, Caitlin and Jessica.
What gets you jazzed up about that one?
Number one contender fight. Let's be honest about it. That fight's on this card as a backup to if something were for whatever reason to happen, Joanna or Valentina. You know, so Jara Eubanks has come out and says she's going up to 135. Okay, so pretty much there really isn't another option. That is clearly a number one contender's fight.
Yeah, I certainly grasp that. And it kind of shows you basically what the super plus side of the flyweight division is, because you're looking at Jessica Ai, who is, to me, I feel like Jessica Ai is my pick, even though she's a slight dog, but for Jessica Ai in another weight class when she had a fight at 135, loss after loss after loss, that 125 drop, both the drop in weight and the drop in competition, she now finds herself kind of on the peripheral of a championship shot. So that kind of shows you what 125 has done for her, and it'll be interesting to see what it does for a fighter like Ioana Yanji. So I certainly understand why you got to get jazzed up for Aya and Kaitlyn, just because the winner will likely fight the winner of Ioana and Shevchenko. But man, I tell you what, Jason, the fight I'm looking forward to the most in the prelims is the other women's fight on the card, the strawweight contest between Nina Ansaroff and Claudia Gadella. I mean, Claudia, to me, has just been a stalwart among the top fighters in the strawweight food chain. And Nina Ansaroff is a fighter who I knew was quality, but the run she has gone on has kind of surpassed my expectations of what she was going to do in the UFC. And this is just the ultimate litmus test for her against Claudia Gadella. So while the winner of Gadella and Nina may not be guaranteed a title shot, I think just because the strawweight division is a lot more deeper, that's kind of why I'm gravitating towards that one more. But again, those are two solid female fights atop the FS1 card.
I kind of, in a way, I kind of feel that Claudia Gadelha and Nina Ansaroff is a little bit of a showcase fight for Claudia Gadelha. I mean, look, you're completely right. Nina Ansaroff is a high-level fighter. I kind of feel like Claudia is at another level.
She definitely is, and it shows in the betting odds for sure. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're power ranking all-time fighters at women's strawweight, Claudia is there. I mean, she's been a fixture for a very long time. And if you look at Nina Ansaroff's resume, I mean, she simply hasn't been competitive against fighters at Claudia's level. But lately, Ansaroff has had success. When Ansaroff took on Randa Markos, I mean, that's a fight I thought Randa Markos was going to end the winner. And that was kind of a fight in which it opened my eyes of what Nina can accomplish. And in this fight, for all intents and purposes, Jason, Claudia Gadelha is my pick. In fact, I think there's a chance she gets a finish. I think she taps out Ansaroff. But because I kind of hold Claudia so highly, I am – that's kind of why. I think if you power rank the four fighters, Claudia, I, Chikagian, and Ansaroff, Claudia to me is the most interesting of those four. So that's kind of why I gravitate towards there. And again, I think Claudia is surely the pick. I'm looking forward to that one. And I'll pitch it to you, Jason. I mean – who do you think is going to be the winner in that flyweight fight? Who do you anticipate a Jessica Ai calling out the champion or Kaitlyn Chookagian?
My pick's Jessica Ai. I think that's a close fight. I think it goes all 15 minutes. It's going to be probably a razor close decision. I Jessica Ai, her natural weight is 125 pounds. I mean, when you go back to just her pre-UFC career, her success was at 125 pounds. I mean, so to me, that's a fight that sticks out. I'll tell you another fight that sticks out to me is Elias Theodoro and Eric Anders. Theodoro, is a guy that, has been a decision machine. Six straight fights have gone to decision after, two of his first three fights in the UFC were stoppage wins. I mean, so that one sticks out to me. Of course, this fight card has gone through some change in terms of the early prelims. Diego Fajeo was supposed to take on John McDessie. McDessie pulls out of the fight. Then Jesse Ronson, back in the UFC, gets his opportunity to get this fight. And pretty much the best way to describe after being pulled from this fight was sometimes honesty is not the best policy when it comes to the UFC. And this is what Jesse wrote on his Facebook page. Quote, "To answer everyone's questions about my UFC situation, straight up, no holding back here. It's Tuesday morning. I wake up at 177.4. After eating a small meal and drinking 500 milliliters of water, I was 178.8. I did an easy workout in Hamilton for an hour and got down to 175.2, where I went when I went to Toronto for the UFC check-in. I was asked how I felt and how everything was. I told them right from the beginning I'm heavy and worried about making weight. They did check-in weight and proceeded as usual. I spoke with UFC PI nutritionist Clint. Told him about my diet and the diet plan I'm currently on and what my plans were to cut and make weight. Showed him all my supplements. After a lengthy chat, it was evident that I wasn't going to make the 156-pound limit in my depleted state and that I would only hurt myself doing so. And if I missed the fight, could be called off. And I like a bigger idiot, or it may happen, but I have done too much dehydrating. I wouldn't be able to fight were shit. So he suggested I seek a catchweight and inform the UFC as a professional that 156 wasn't going to happen. Be truthful and honest and don't dick them around and see if they go for it. I told my manager all of this. He called Sean Shelby, pleaded my case. The return answer I got was no catchweight, fight is off. Your contract has been rescinded and you'll never fight for the UFC again. Done. I'm slightly stunned and shocked still at that statement. It's aggressive, but you can't fuck around at the highest level, and I will say thank you, UFC, for the opportunity. Hopefully, that was just heat of the moment, anger talk slash discussions, Mr. Shelby. Sorry, I couldn't have come through for you. Good luck with the show. Once again, Daniel, sometimes honesty is not the best policy when it comes to the UFC.
That dude should have just showed up overweight and fought the fight, got the advantage, got the win, and stayed in the UFC. I mean, what a bad culture for the UFC. Don't get me wrong. I'm assuming when Jesse Ronson was contacted about this fight a couple weeks out, was it like 11, 12 days a month? When he was contacted about the fight, Jason, surely he was asked, are you sure you're going to make weight? And I'm sure that's where the emotion comes from. When you ask someone, are you sure you're going to make weight, and they miss it, that's when you're really angry, because they basically were – not that they lied to you, but – It you know, we all know how arbitrary and volatile weight cutting is. That's certainly something you can't be certain about. So that's where I understand the emotion, but you hit the nail on the head. Honesty in the UFC. You just can't be honest. It doesn't pay to be honest because you get such an emotional reaction out of Sean Shelby. It's kind of embarrassing because, again, this is this weight cutting deal. If we're going to find ourselves in a situation where we're fixing it or improving it, man, honesty and communication is so valuable. When a guy knows it's not going to go well, it's important for him to let the promoters know, let people that can pull him out of the fight know. And when you go out and you tell a guy he will not only – his contract has not only been rescinded, but he will never fight in the UFC again, the lesson learned by any fighter – paying attention to the story is never communicate to the UFC that you might miss weight or that you want a catchweight fight. That is the lesson learned.
You know what the funny thing is on the term catchweight? And I've had people say this to me. They go, can we stop calling it a catchweight fight? Can we just call it a contracted weight fight? And I was like, yeah, that's kind of a good way to paint the picture.
A missed weight fight? A catchweight fight sounds intentional. It sounds like you guys agreed to it. It's not a catchweight fight because one dude, one poor soul, weighed in at the correct limit. You know, it's just absolutely a messy situation, but I'm glad we're covering it. Sean Shelby, you're a loser this week, man. You're such a genius, right?
I almost feel like what was communicated to the UFC when Jesse took this fight?
Well, I guarantee you the UFC does this every time there's a short notice fight. They ask the people, are you going to make weight? What's your weight now? Can you do it? And I'm pretty sure Jesse Ronson fed him a bunch of BS. That's my belief. And that's kind of why I understand the UFC's point of view somewhat, but it's not enough to justify telling a guy he's never going to be in the UFC again. I mean, because the thing is, Jesse Ronson isn't a surefire prospect. He's already had an opportunity in the UFC. And it's one of the few instances in which a UFC employee is actually going to live up to the quote they say, because it's not like he's an undeniable guy. This is a guy they called on short notice.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things of you would love to hear the UFC side of the story to see what happened, because it makes you wonder if something's out there. But definitely wanted to throw that out there. Something else I wanted to throw out there was yesterday on social media, I saw the kind of the media talking about the UFC telling the media right before the UFC 231, or should I say the media in attendance, right before the press conference said, hey, by the way, only questions related to UFC 231, which was, a.k.a., please don't ask Dana White about Greg Hardy. That's what that – and we'll get into Greg Hardy later. But I saw the Mixed Martial Arts Journalist Association put out this statement where – they go, after reports from the media on site today at UFC 231 press conference, the MMAJA is looking to the situation in which reporters felt they were unable to freely ask questions. The MMAJA has been in touch with UFC PR, which said their intention was for reporters to focus their questions on Saturday's card and away from other topics. UFC said they did not direct the media to avoid specific subjects, but was the impression felt by several MMAJA members credentialed for the event. Given the miscommunication, the MMAJA is seeking to secure a remedy with the UFC. Now, here's my take on it. And I can't sit there and say how I would react if I was in that situation, because I don't know, But my general thought was that was a prime example of how much the UFC controls the traveling media, that they didn't ask. Because, look, the question would have been about Greg Hardy. Let's be flat out honest about it. I get why the UFC only wants those questions. But, man, and we're going to get into Greg Hardy later, but I just think that's a bad look for some of the media in attendance.
It is, man. It absolutely is. And, man, what a bunch of malarkey, man. What a bunch of BS from both sides and those two stupid quotes, or that one quote about how the UFC didn't intend to avoid topics. I just wanted to focus on you. Like, whenever you never do something like that, and all of a sudden you do it, and it just happens to be the same time a controversial story that you created comes out. That's why you did it. I mean, we're not idiots. Quit thinking we're idiots. We need a BS meter on this podcast where we just hit it.
Oh, don't worry. We've got a BS segment coming up later in the show.
I know.
Because I'm going to play some Dana White comments, and I'm just going to ask you, hey, where's your BS meter in terms of what Dana White had to say? Don't worry. We got that coming up.
We got so much crap to talk about. It's just sad, man. And the thing is, like, that's the climate of media today. Like, I'm a member of the media. And there are this is the dynamic of media people. The media wants to cover things, and the people being covered wants the media to do PR for them. Listen, that's how it works.
I run a media company. Yeah. I mean, look, we're a small media company. Let's not act like we're anything big. We're a small business. You know, we're a small business. But you would, if I've got a reporter going out to cover a press conference, look, I want them to be able to ask any questions. But, you know, look, it is what it is. Oh, that's
it's crap. No, I mean, it is what it is.
That's a Max Holloway cliche for you right there. Yeah. It is what it is. Or Johnny Hendricks, one of the two.
But we have to call it out because it's like we're not being paid to do public relations. I would love to do PR for the UFC. If they're five-figure contract, six-figure contract, I'll do it.
I've said this forever. MMA promotions view the media as an extension of their PR department.
And they don't pay all of us.
No. Look, and I understand why the UFC or any other MMA promoter looks at the media like that. You want to control the narrative. Let's not kid ourselves. We all know that.
Yeah, 10-8 round for the UFC from that press conference.
Hey, it worked out well for them. You know, I watched a little bit of press conference. I'm not going to sit there and say I watched the entire thing. I probably watched about 10, 15 minutes of it. And, you know, one of the questions we got in, this was from at CJK_WI. It says, I can't get over how bad Max looked at the press conference today. Similar to last time, repeating himself, slurring words, I have a bad feeling. I will say this, I did not get that opinion of Max. I thought Max was pretty hilarious, to be honest with you. You know, talking about the, I forget what he called it, the Max Express or the Holloway Express. And he talked about the next stop is at T-City. And be sure to be on the train to watch the show. I was like, all right, Max, I like the way you're framing this thing. And there was another part where Ortega got asked about kind of the health of Max Holloway. And he basically just said, he goes, look, I hope he's in great health. You know, I'm not trying to hurt him, but, you know, hey, this is a fight. You know, and I see, I wonder for, you know, and look, I like Max Holloway to win this fight. I just think he is a notch better than Brian Ortega. But I wonder how many people that are picking Brian Ortega in this fight that a good portion of their thought process is, well, Max is, maybe he's not all the way there health-wise.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of people thinking that, Jason. And it's hard to prove it otherwise until he gets in the cage, though. And the reason why I'm picking Ortega is not like dramatically because of that. But at the end of the day, when this fight was first announced, this was like a razor thin fight in my book. And it is. And it's just so close. And when you have a guy in Holloway who you haven't seen fight since December of last year, and he's battled health, scary health issues. You are lent to go in a close fight. I feel like you tend to gravitate towards the guy you've seen lately. It's the safer pick. But Max Holloway, when he has fought, he has displayed just an unbelievable dominance inside the cage of the featherweight division. I mean, his back-to-back wins over Aldo, just absolutely tremendous. And while maybe the absence makes us doubt him, it also makes us kind of forget how great Max Holloway actually is as a fighter. Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that I was thinking about, as I was thinking about things I want to talk about here today, was think about what we thought about Max Holloway 12 months ago and what we thought of Brian Ortega 12 months ago. I mean, you go back 12 months ago, December 2nd, 2017, Max Holloway destroys Jose Aldo for a second time. A week after that, December 9th, Brian Ortega beats Cub Swanson. And then, of course, we all know Ortega steps up on short notice to take on Frankie Edgar, and no one saw that one coming. I mean, no one predicted that Brian Ortega would knock out Frankie Edgar in the opening round. No one predicted that. And so it's kind of interesting how both of these guys' careers have kind of gone in two different directions, where, you know, Ortega, that stock keeps rising. And for Max Holloway, you kind of feel like because of the pulling out of fights over the last year, that his stock has gone down.
Yeah, I mean, look, Max Holloway's gone out there. He's reeled together 12 consecutive UFC wins. If this guy continues to win fights as the kingpin of the featherweight division, he's going to put himself in greatest of all time conversation. That's the train track the Max Express is currently on. For Brian Ortega, you bring up a great point. I mean, we've seen a steady progression, but in terms of thinking about him among the top tippy-top guys at 145, it's basically just after the Frankie Edgar fight is when he's been a part of that conversation. It's been a short period. It's only been one performance, but it was such a great performance, and it kind of validated, you know, as guys rise up, you begin to have potential expectations for what they could do. And whenever they validate him, that's when you really cement them in your mind. You perceive them that way. And the performance against Frankie Edgar, I mean, he really took it to Edgar. This is a guy who is always competitive, even in his losses. And to get knocked out in the first round kind of showcased to me just how dang great Brian Ortega is at evolving his game. I mean, we know the MO on the early part of his career, Jason, and it is he's going to pull off a great third round finish. Mm-hmm. And it's usually going to be due to his grappling. And here we showcase kind of the power and the ability to progress that he's made. So I don't feel good about it at all, because you can't feel good picking against Max Holloway. You can't feel good picking against one of the best featherweight fighters we have ever seen compete in the weight class. But I do feel like Brian Ortega is going to win this fight, Jason.
How do you see the victory coming, though?
I think this is going to be a tremendous fight. I really do. I think this is going to be one of the better fights we've seen in the division's history. And I think we're going to see a late finisher Ortega. I mean, we have seen Ortega win fights in the third round, but in the UFC, we haven't seen him win a fight in the championship rounds. He's never gone to round four or round five. And I predict a fifth round finish for Brian Ortega. It's a finish he needed. It's going to be just like Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder, except there's actually a finish. And he gets the finish late against Max Holloway. I'm going triangle choke, just to add a little sprinkle on my prediction there, Jason.
Well, you got to remember, four of his UFC wins have come in the final round of a three-round fight, you know, going back to the win over Thiago Tavares back in 2015, then Diego Brandão, Clay Guida, and then Renato Moncano, who, by the way, we should note, is in Toronto. He will step on the scale on Friday, and he is the backup plan. If something were to happen where, you know, whether it's Brian or Max does not make it to the fight on Saturday night, Moncano would be the guy that steps up. Now, you're picking Ortega. I'm picking Holloway. Are you more confident in that pick than in your pick for Joanna and Shevchenko?
No, I'm not. I'm absolutely not. How about you? How are you feeling in terms of confidence in those two top two fights? Because I'm more confident in my Joanna Shevchenko pick.
Man, I'd probably be more confident in picking Shevchenko than I am Holloway.
Exactly. And I think here's the factor. I don't feel good about Joanna on Jacek's chances in this fight. I mean, this is a close fight. Like, I'm not saying she should be a 300 dog, but in terms of close fights, close championship fights, I have so many concerns for Joanna in terms of lack of momentum and mental, like, I don't know, man. She just has a lot of stupid quotes, basically, is what I'm saying.
It's interesting. You know, it's bringing up the betting odds, which as of Thursday morning, she's plus 290 at five times. This started at – she was plus 180 when this line initially came out back on October 11th. And for Valentina, she's minus 350. She opened up at minus 260. When I saw the betting odds earlier this week, I was like, wow, that's – that's kind of surprising. I'm like, man, if I was gonna, you know, if I was in Vegas and I was gonna place a little bet on the fight, I would probably be tempted by Joanna. I mean, obviously, her thing has got to be volume. Is, you know, can she do there? But one thing she said yesterday at the press conference that really jumped out to me, where she said, "Winning on Saturday night proves her as the GOAT of women's MMA." I don't know about that one.
Yeah,
I think neither. Rose Namajunas would have a pretty good argument.
And I think Amanda Nunes would too. I think when Rose
or
is like
Chris Cyborg,
or you know Gina Carano. Not really, just kidding. But yes, when Rose Namajunas has completely beaten you pretty good in two consecutive fights, I would certainly say you can't really call yourself the GOAT, right? You're more like the lamb or something. It's that quote probably shifted the odds, like, you know, a bit. Just that one quote, they're like, oh man, Joanna's not in the right mental spot. She thinks she's the GOAT. Don't get me wrong, man. We're doing a top 10 women fighters of all time. Joanna on Jędrzejczyk's definitely there. I mean, she's absolutely – what she did as the women's strawweight champion, her run was fantastic. And that's kind of why the odds are a bit surprising. I wasn't aware the odds were that long, like 10 seconds ago. That's crazy to me. Because Joanna is just so technically sound, and she absolutely has an avenue to win. And it's absolutely due to high volume, absolutely due to utilizing her speed to outpoint Shevchenko. And so that's – and we've seen her compete, just really change the game. And I do think Shevchenko, to me, is the more sound fighter from a fighter IQ standpoint, the one you're less concerned about doing something stupid inside the cage or not fighting up to her potential. And again, a big portion is when you talk about the difference coming down from 135, you kind of tend to always favor the fighter who's coming down in weight than the one coming up in weight. That, to me, is another big factor, just to go along with how great of a striker Shevchenko is in her own right.
You know, one of the things when they did the stare down yesterday, I didn't see a huge difference in size. You know, I mean, both of them kind of seemed about the way they'd be, but I just, you know, I think there's a lot of questions. Can Joanna become, you know, I mean, look, you really can't call her Joanna champion at this point. I mean, obviously, if she wins on Saturday night, that's a totally different story. But, man, I do wonder, and obviously these two girls have the Muay Thai history, you know, prior to their MMA careers. I just, the path to Joanna winning. I mean, I think there is a path, and it's with volume punching, but man, I just, when I think of who could knock out who, to me, it's Shevchenko gets the knockout.
Oh, yeah. If we're talking about a finish, Jason, I think we both know who's going to win this fight. I mean, don't get me wrong, Joanna maybe can catch her in a submission, but in her entire career, Joanna Jędrzejczyk is like one submission, and it is prior to her run in the UFC. So if there's a finish, it's likely due to a Shevchenko KO. I don't think we're going to get that, though. I mean, Joanna's incredibly tough, and we saw her fight UFC 223 against Namajunas, and even if maybe she does land the volume, I think it's going to show the more significant strikes are going to come through Shevchenko. And Shevchenko is also a brilliant striker. I think we're due for a great fight here that's going to be entertaining to go along with just high-level MMA.
And this is how I would frame this title fight from the UFC. This is their way to redo the introduction of women's flyweight.
You're telling me Nico Montano's historic run as flyweight champion wasn't the tone they wanted to set, Jason?
I'm just saying, I don't think you're really going to hear anybody talking about Nico Montano on Saturday.
Yeah, it feels like the gap between her.
I wonder, is it like, hey, how UFC broadcasters can't mention the Bellator word on a show? Is it kind of like, do they get that memo before they go, hey, guys, don't even mention Nico's name?
Yeah, she's under contract. Don't mention her. I mean, she almost seems like the Dave Monet, you know, of the flyweight division. Like I've never heard of Dave Monet, you know. I think he's like the first middleweight champion. Maybe like the second one. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. She has completely become the forgotten inaugural.
She was champion like a few months ago. It was a few months ago, Jason. A few months ago, she was champion. And yeah. She's like the Dave Monet of, Dave Monet was the inaugural middleweight champion, by the way.
By the way, speaking of the betting odds, Cowboy Oliveira plus 110. That's kind of interesting to me. Eric Anders plus 100. That's an interesting line to me. Interested on the Aubin Mercier, Gilbert Burns essentially being a pick 'em. Alexander Radic is a 6-1 favorite against Devin Clark. Oof, that's some big odds there. Not really surprised. Chad Priest, a big favorite over Diego Lima. Diego Fajeo, also a big favorite over Kyle Nelson. You know, when I look at those odds, I mean, Cowboy Nelson, that's just a great fight.
Oh, it is. And it's like, it feels like for Gunnar Nelson, this is a huge chance to, this feels like a crossroads fight for him. It really does. Because a win over Alex Oliveira, along with the fact that apparently Gunnar Nelson has figured out how to do a bench press, it's like that this could be a crossroads.
That is the most amazing story to come out this week.
It's really crazy. So many people have done weights before, right? People listening to this podcast, like most of us have attempted to do weights. Most of us know like how to do a curl with a dumbbell. And he looks great. Man, I've seen some of those pictures. That dude is ripped. And I think this is an opportunity for him to just kind of mount another climb up the mountain. But once again, the story with Gunnar Nelson is this guy's a damn great grappler. But his stand-up just is not active enough to be interesting, especially against a guy who is so good in the in-between parts of fights like Oliveira. So that's why I'm concerned. That's why you can look at that plus 110 and think it's a little juicy. But I do get the sense that Gunnar Nelson is going to make a statement here.
Man, I'm picking Cowboy in that one.
Yeah, but I can't blame you. It's a great fight for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Duadu and Bochniak, you're going to hear from Bochniak here shortly. I think this is really going to tell us a lot. About Akeem Duwadu, Jimmy Manuel, Thiago Santos, would be surprised that fight makes it out of the first round.
Yeah, that's just a great, great fight for the main card.
Performance of the night, one of the performance of the night bonuses coming out of that fight.
Yeah,
someone's probably getting brutally knocked out.
And it's going to happen on the pay-per-view. I mean, to me, the two dogs I'm interested in are Bochniak and Manuel. I mean, Santos looked great against Eric Anders, but man, I just think that fight is just rock 'em sock 'em. Anything can happen. Might as well take the dog.
And I'll tell you this, man. I love that OAB Gilbert Burns fight.
Yeah, a super important fight for OAB coming off that loss to Hernandez. I think I love that fight, and I love the opportunity to see Alexander Rakic, see him compete. And there's a reason why he's such a huge favorite against Devin Clark. And I'm just looking forward to watching that fight. In Lapri Lima, I mean, Lapri probably is obviously the favorite, but I mean, I do think Lima could make it somewhat interesting if it stays on the feet, which is always doubtful. But I don't know. I'm looking forward to the card. The prelims are solid, not A++, but the main card is certainly a solid B+ or an A-.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to watching these fights on Saturday night, UFC 231. Now we're going to get to the interview portion of the show. Up first, you're going to hear from Kyle Bochniak, who's going to be fighting a part of that main card against Keem Duwadu on Saturday night. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Brent Primus, who's going to be defending the Bellator lightweight title next Friday night against Michael Chandler. Then I'll have a chance to hear my conversation with Rob Font. And then the final conversation will be with Louis Smolka, who's coming off that win at UFC Beijing. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man we talked to back in April after his last fight. And now, of course, he's going to be fighting here. UFC 231, as he takes on Akeem Duwadu. It is Kyle Bochniak. Kyle, as always, man, I appreciate the time. Did hear you went up to TriStar, got some training in for this fight. What kind of led to
you know, deciding to go up there?
You know, we had a specific matchup that we were trying to get some good different looks in. We were looking some places, go around the country or whatever to get some looks. We're going to go down to, I think it was Minnesota. My manager Tyson had a gym down there with this guy Brock, and we're going to move around with some guys down there. But they all had fights that were lined up too close, so we couldn't get any sparring. So we started exploring, and we figured, you know, Montreal's 5-hour drive up north across the border of Canada, and sometimes you forget how close it is and just the swimming pool of talent up there and the coaching. So we decided, you know, let's go all in. My head coach, John Clark, went with me. We went up there, stayed up for a week, got some good rounds, good sparring, and it seemed like a good fit. Faraz asked us to come back or if I wanted to finish up my camp up there. You know, I was excited, so I came home for another week, sharpened up, healed up, went back and finished my last week of hard sparring up there, and, you know, I loved it. So I'll definitely be making that my second home and going up there and maybe doing some future camps.
And of course, we all remember that fight you had back in April against the Beat. Obviously, I'm sure it gained a lot of new fans for you. But, you know, kind of as you move past that fight and preparations for this fight, is there any major learning lessons you took from that fight that have, you know, shown you to the improvements you needed to make?
Yeah, I'm always making improvements. I mean, every fight, you know, we make mental notes, or my coaches find holes that I need to fix or whatever. So, you know, we always go back to the drawing board and fix stuff. So every fight I'm learning, every fight camp, I'm getting better. In between every single fight, I grow tremendously. So I'm always growing as a fighter, but just being in like such a war, you know, it definitely gives confidence to my, mindset, how strong my mind is in my heart. And I know I can go the distance with anyone. No matter how tough it gets or how bloody or how crazy of a war it is, I know that's when I thrive. And, you know, I always have that in my back pocket. Like I said, I'm always growing as a mixed martial artist. And there's still so much of assets of my game that people haven't seen yet. And I think this is going to be a great matchup to showcase all facets of my game. So, you know, I'm very excited for it.
Speaking about going the distance, you've gone the distance the last five fights.
Yeah.
Does that bother you at all that you've had to go distance, or is it like, oh, man, bring it on?
No. You know, there's no way around it. Like, I got in the UFC kind of green, you know, 6-0. I got all my experience in the UFC fighting top level guys, and every single of those fights, everybody was a threat. And everybody was unique in their own way. And every single fight camp was so unique. So that's why I grow so much. And this past camp, man, these last 6 months, 7 months actually, like, I really found myself as a fighter. I found myself mentally as a fighter, mixed martial artist, and my style. So, you know, like I said, I'm very excited, and it's time to start finishing people now. I have a couple fights left on this contract, and, you know, the UFC and the fan base, I have a good fan base now. So when I go in here and put on good performance on Saturday, I think it's about time the UFC gives me a push. And but that all comes with what I do on Saturday, what type of performance I present on Saturday. So there's a lot riding on that. I need to go in there. I need to put a good performance to finish this kid. After a tough fight with Zabit, everybody knows who I am, and it's time to strike with the iron's hot and start moving up these rankings.
Speaking about how everyone's a threat, and there's a unique threat every time you step inside competition, what is that unique threat that Akeem brings to the table?
I think he's definitely the most athletic and explosive guy that I fought. He's just got raw talent, like raw athletic attributes. You could just see by his physique, he's a specimen, he's explosive. But, you know, that stuff doesn't mean anything. I am as well. I'm very athletic, very explosive, and I have cardio for days, and I have a mindset of a champion. I think he's got great Muay Thai, you know, Dutch kickboxer. I don't think he's as well-rounded as I am or battle-tested as I am. But I can't underestimate him. You know, we never know. Who knows? Maybe his ground game came along a long way. His takedown defense is a long way. Who knows? He's going to mix things up, start throwing tornado kicks like Zabit. I have no idea, so I'm ready for anything.
Is that kind of, you know, and I've talked to a lot of fighters about this, they'll say, you know, really the fighting style is just read and react, because you never know what someone's going to bring in. But it's also vice versa. He doesn't know what you've been working on. So is it, How would you say what's your version of reading and reacting?
You know, I've come a long way from, I tend to overthink things in my brain and I get tunnel vision when I'm in that cage. And I think I had a breakthrough this past camp. We work on his strengths. We know he's explosive. He's got good kicks and all that stuff. And he's got good hips and takedown defense. Yeah, we get it. He's got good strengths. We focus on it. But then we start focusing on what I'm good at. We sharpen my skills. And I'm not too worried about what he's going to do. I'm going to go in there and do what I'm going to do.
In previous camps, have you kind of felt like that maybe you worried too much about your opponent as opposed to doing what you want to do?
Not so much as worrying about my opponents, but worrying about a specific technique that I just did during camp. And if it doesn't present itself, then you're like, oh, where do I go now? And you just kind of react. And I wasn't really, during those fights when that happened, I wasn't really just being creative. I was kind of getting stuck. And, you know, last fight was Abbott. That was different. I was just balls. I was just going in there, sticking my tongue out and just throwing. Really wasn't too much technique. Just hard. But, you know, when you lose your way in a fight, you look for a specific technique and it doesn't present itself, I would kind of get lost. But now it's more just I found my style. I'm battle tested. I've been in the octagon for, I think, like, I don't know, 115 minutes now. I mean, an hour and 15 minutes. So I've gone the distance. I have the experience. Now it's just be who I am as a fighter and do what I do.
Do you at all kind of feel like you have to live up to the fighting style that you showed in your last matchup? I mean, or is it like, you know, look, me and my team have put together a game plan. We know what we need to do, but I mean, has anybody in your team kind of said, hey, Kyle, let's not make sure we don't kind of, you know, revert back to, you know, kind of that fighting style?
I don't know. That fighting style is just in my DNA. I can't help it. I was doing that all like last camp and stuff, and he told me not to do it. And I don't know what it was when Zabit, I forget what he did, but I got hit and I was like, just got crazy. It's just in my DNA, but I gotta bring that back a little bit. And that's where I am as a fighter, you know, like how to mix it up, like use that pressure and then kind of fall back a little bit, you know, stuff like that. So it's just going to be exciting. I don't want to reveal too much, but you're going to have to tune in on December 8th and check it out.
I mean, would you almost say it's kind of a balancing act of kind of mixing those two together and having them form correctly?
Of course. Definitely finding your fighting style or just a fight in general, just after trying to perfect all different fundamentals of every martial art. Like as you get experience, you can kind of like edit it, take out what doesn't work, and then keep what works for you. And that's basically what your style becomes. So every camp is different and every fight is different. And, you know, I've been in the UFC for a couple of years now, had some battles and been the distance in every fight. And, you know, people want finishes and stuff, but it also was a blessing because it's molded me who I am now. Mm-hmm. And I'm super excited and super confident and just can't wait for December 8th. And I mean, it's next week and I just needed to get here already.
You mentioned about that fighting style and your DNA. I mean, is that something that did it come kind of instantly for you of what your fighting style would be? You know, when you think about your early days in the sport, or do you remember a moment where it all kind of clicked for you?
I mean, my first UFC fight, it was just really, I remember I was fighting Charles Rose at the Garden. We're both Bostonians and, I had a fight a week before and, I got the short notice to make my debut in 4 days. So I remember being in there and think I was going to be so nervous, but then the fists were flying and I just remember smiling like, this is it, man. This is it. This is what I want to do. This is awesome. I don't care if I win or lose right now. I'm just going to go out on my shield. And that's when I realized that I have the mindset of a fighter and it's in my DNA. And no matter what, I'm just going to come forward and push. But then, you know, I was very green then. So now I have the experience and I've been in every position. I've been good positions, bad positions. I've been hurt. I've hurt my opponents. So, you know, all that experience is going to play a role next week.
What would you label as, I mean, I know there's multiple keys to getting the victory here, but what's one of the keys you would label of what you need to do, you know, next Saturday to get the win?
Just do me. Don't worry about what he's doing. Obviously I'm going to be aware of his strengths and stuff, but focus on myself and just keep doing what I do, man. Just come forward and there's really not much to it. I'm already strong mentally. I'm going to, whatever presents itself, I'm in a shitty spot, I'll get out of it. This is the way I am. So I'm very confident in my preparation. I'm very confident in what I'm going to do on Saturday.
And of course, everyone's going to be able to watch this fight come up here from Toronto, UFC 231. Of course, main card live on pay-per-view. Kyle, as always, man, I appreciate time. Let everyone know they can find out on social media and those sponsors that help support you.
Yeah, man. Thank you for your time. And you guys can follow me, Kyle Bochniak, at UFC on Instagram and at Kyle Bochniak on Twitter. And make sure you tune on pay-per-view. I kick off the pay-per-view card next Saturday. Can't wait.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report podcast, a man who's finally the fight that I swear we have been talking about for 6 months, Brent Primus, Michael Chandler, is finally here. Brent, I feel like we have talked countless times about this fight. For you, I mean, you know, we're just about a week out from this fight. Are you just like, let's let Friday, December 14th, just get here so we can finally end this thing?
Exactly, man. I just cannot wait. I'm really excited for sure.
You know, I am sure you, and I know we've talked about this in the past, but you've probably gone back and you've looked at that first fight so many times. Is it at the point where, I don't know if you want to say pointless to watch, but kind of like there's no real reason to go back because you've just watched that fight so many times, so you know exactly what happened?
Yeah, I mean, I was there. I know exactly what happened, and I saw the look in his eyes. I heard him talking to Scott Coker after the fight. I know exactly what happened. So does he. And I honestly haven't watched the fight in a long time because I just want to get it over with and do it again, you know. And, yeah, man, I just want to fight this guy and just get it over with.
How is preparations different this time as opposed to the first fight?
I mean, my training camps are always, you know, brutal and hard and tough, you know, so that's, nothing's changed there, but me and my coach has got a little different game plan this time, and we've been working on that game plan, and I'm going to execute it, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, they always talk about that in rematch of, you know, it's kind of who is the fighter that makes the bigger adjustments, and, you know, and always a cliche is, oh, it's the guy who lost the first fight has the advantage going to the second fight. I know you're not going to agree with that. Well, why would you say you have the advantage?
You know, I think I'm in his head. I think he's going to be worrying about that leg, and I got a pretty cool game plan for that. And I'm going to switch it up a little bit and do a couple things different. And I really think they're going to work well.
I mean, do you feel like, and I guess because of the first fight, no one really gave you credit. I think we both understand that. I mean, do you kind of feel like this is, I don't know if redemption's the right word, but kind of a way to just kind of silence the critics?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, I know all my training partners and all my coaches, we know what happened, so there's no doubt in our minds or whatever, but there's definitely a lot of critics and a lot of people out there that, you know, think otherwise, and I can't wait to go show them that it wasn't a fluke and I'm the real deal.
And of course, you get a chance to fight over in Hawaii. I mean, obviously, this is a pretty historical type event. I mean, we haven't seen a major promotion, you know, have a fight card in Hawaii. I mean, when you get this fight off, or what were you kind of like, hell yeah, man, I'm going to get a payday plus a little vacation out of this?
Yeah, exactly. You know, when I was supposed to fight him in Missouri in his hometown, and then I got a little injured, and, you know, I was so depressed for a while, and it really, really sucked, and my wife's like, man, everything happens for a reason, and, you know, now I'm fighting in Hawaii, so it's definitely way better, and after I, you know, whoop his butt, then I can enjoy life a little bit and go hang out on the beach and go eat some food.
I got to imagine your wife was pretty happy when you told her, hey, by the way, my next fight's in Hawaii.
Yeah, she was definitely excited. Way better than Missouri, man. Way better.
I mean, do you kind of look at this fight and say, you know what, yes, I'm the champion, but all the pressure's really on your opponent?
Yeah, man. Honestly, you know, once I beat this guy, what's he going to do now? It's going to be hard for him to make his way back up to the 155 division, at least to get another chance at me. He's going to have to go, you know, have a bunch of fights before he fights me again. That's what I feel. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure on this dude, and let's see if it was really a fluke, and let's see what he can do. And I feel like a lot of pressure is on him for sure. I mean, at the same time with me, I always put pressure on myself. I put the world on my shoulders. I pretty much like a do or die thing for me. And it sounds crazy, but I'm ready to go in there and die, man. I'm ready to go in there and throw down and bleed, and I'm ready for a war.
It's been so long since we had a chance to see you in competition back in June of last year. How would you say you're a different fighter now as opposed to then?
Just a little bit more experience, I guess. I've been working on a lot of things, and but at the same time, you know, I'm the same guy, I'm the same fighter, and I believe in my ground game, I believe in my stand up, and but at the same time, I've been working on new things, and you always evolve when you're a fighter, and if you're training with your good coaches and everything. So I've definitely have gotten better, and just today my coach is saying that I'm way more experienced, way better, and way more comfortable and everything. So I definitely feel like I'm a better version of myself than I was when I fought him the first time.
How would you say your game and Chandler's game is similar but different?
I don't know. We're similar just because we're both, you know, tough dudes, and we're down to go in there and throw down. But I definitely think our strategies are a little bit different. For instance, I don't really care about being on my back. I am comfortable, 100% comfortable with my guard. And I do not see that guy being on his back, you know, going for submissions and sweeps and stuff like that. He likes to stand, bang, and throw that right hand. And he's got a good double. And, I like to stand up and bang too. So we're going to go out there and see which style is the best.
Would you say his double leg takedown is his biggest asset?
I think his double leg and his right hand and his speed is his biggest asset, his best thing for sure. I'm ready for that. I'm preparing for that, and I've been training for that. And if he takes me down, then great, no big deal.
And I know anyone who goes on your, especially on your Instagram account, there was an Instagram post you had where he says, when you break your training partner's nose and you can pop it back into place, Dr. Brent Primus to the rescue. So I got to hear the story on this one.
Man, I've broken a lot of my training partner's noses before. This is the first time that I actually fixed it, though. We were just training, and you know, my buddy Sharon Fletcher, he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, and he's helping my ground game. And we put the little gloves on, kind of throw little punches or whatever. And I was in his side mount, and he shrimped towards me, and I just threw a pepper punch and hit him right on the nose. And it made a pretty crazy cracking noise. And he started just kind of screaming, squealing, and you know, rolling on the ground. I thought it broke his orbital socket at first. And then by the time he was, you know, rolling, he looked up at me, and there's blood all over his face. I was like, oh, my God, what the hell did I do? This dude. And once we wiped the blood off, I could see his nose was crooked. And so I was like, okay, it's just a broken nose. That's good. And it was pretty crooked. So I was like, man, let's do this. Let's put it back together. And so I've seen it done before, and you know, let's do it. I popped it back together. And it's a way straighter than what it was, for sure.
Do you kind of joke with the fact of, hey, man, I kind of made your nose a little better?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, I feel like he's lucky that I was there to put it back in place for him. But there's been a couple of times where I've broken my training partner's noses, and, man, they're like the tip of their nose is almost touching their cheek, and it was like almost bulging out of the skin. So I remember one time I think I kicked him in the face. I kicked one of my buddies in the face. And he looked at me, and he's like, is it bad? Is it bad? And I remember looking at it like, oh, my God, he's deformed. And he asked me to fix it, and I was like, dude, there's no way I'm touching that thing. And, he had to put that back in himself, or he had to get it fixed or whatever. But I definitely feel more comfortable, and I feel like I'm a pretty good healer of the nose. So if I break into my training partner's noses again, I'm definitely going to pop it back for him.
Now you got to feel bad when you do that, right?
Oh, 100%. I apologized to him like 1,000 times, and, you know, I bought him lunch. And, I mean, it's never good when you break your training partners, especially when, you know, you only have, you know, 5 or 6, 7 good training partners. And when you injure them, it sucks for sure. And I felt bad. I felt horrible. And I still do. And Sorry, Saren, if you hear this.
You know, obviously, we're just over a week out from this fight, and you're wrapping up your training for this one. Do you think this fight's going to be emotional?
Man, everything's – when you put so much into a fight, your heart and soul, and you leave your family, and you train past the limits, and you diet like crazy, it's emotional. It really is, you know. And it's definitely emotional, mentally and physically, and especially when there's so much on the line, my family, you know, my record, the belt, everything. It's definitely emotional, man, for sure.
And, of course, this is all going to go down on Friday night, December the 14th, of course, live on the Paramount Network, also streaming on DAZN as well. If you're like me and you're a cord cutter, and that's how you get Bellator product now, is you have that DAZN subscription. So definitely look forward to watching this fight next Friday night. Brent, man, as always, I appreciate time. Let everyone know they can follow you on social media and those sponsors that help support you.
Brent Primus at 155, check me on Instagram. And my sponsors, thank you so much for always helping me out with everything. Bomb Squad Growers, Roots Organic, Kong Jerky, man, amazing jerky. And who else? Progenix, you know, the best protein, all that stuff. And Vita Goods, and who else here? I just got a hook of a Ball Wash, man, keep you fresh. And then, yeah, man, I think that's about it. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody, a couple things, but yeah, man, if it wasn't for my sponsors, it'd definitely be hard to do these training camps. They're really expensive, so you know, thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for helping me out and sponsoring this, for sure.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be stepping back inside the UFC Octagon. UFC on Fox 31 takes on Sergio Pettis. It's Rob Font. Rob, appreciate the time. When Tyson reaches out to you and says, hey, the fight offer is Sergio Pettis, were you like, hey, isn't he a 125-pounder?
Yeah, no, actually, when he, Duke, if I don't know if you've seen it, Duke put out a post about he wants Sergio to come, I mean, go up and fight in Milwaukee and all that, and then had a couple guys just sent it to me, like, instantly just sent, like, screenshots and DMs and all that, they sent it to me, and I was just like, I mean, talking to Tyson right before I even texted him, he had the contract. It was like perfect. It worked out perfect.
I mean, when you look at his body frame, I mean, do you think it's a body frame of a 35er?
Not really. but you know, that doesn't say much. It doesn't seem say as much. You know, I was fighting at 45 at the local scene. If you watch my last fight at 45, I fought a kid named Tristan Johnson from Toronto, and that kid was huge, you know, and I knocked him out in the first round. So, you know, definitely if I use my strength and my length right, you know, obviously it's going to go my way. But if I don't, then it doesn't really mean nothing, you know.
In terms of kind of what he brings, you know, they talk about the threats or challenges an opponent brings. I mean, what do you see as his biggest threat that he offers you?
Honestly, you know, he switches stances, and that right hand. He steps back and he has a laser right hand, and it's accurate. He doesn't have the most power, but it's more about his placements of the shots instead of like the, you know, he's not one of those guys that like can just, you know, accidentally hit you and knock you out. But if he's real precise, and when he does, it's money. So I'll say, you know, the changing of the stances and that right hand.
Obviously changes for you in terms of how you're preparing for fights now. I know you're out in Las Vegas right now at the PI, and obviously all the fighters, you know, rave about kind of just the various, you know, technology that's out there. For you, is there a piece of technology at the PI that just blows your mind?
Yeah, it's the coffee machine. It's the cappuccino machine. I love it out here. No, you know, it's really the PT for me. It's the PT. It's the you know, the jacuzzi, you know, stuff like that. It's to come back, relax, and kind of recover from a hard camp, you know. I had to get some medicals done out here. You know, it's so much easier to do the medicals out here. You know, you're not dealing with doctors that never seen fighters out here. You know, they always seen fighters, so it's so much easier. And they understand what's going on. And we get that done. And then, like I said, it was the hangout, great facility, you know, and the great food. And obviously, like I said, that cappuccino machine is the shit, man. I love it.
And the weather's a little nicer in Vegas than it is in Northeast.
That too. I forgot about that. You know, we had to get away from that snow. I'm having a blast out here. It's great. You know, it changes the scene a little bit. And obviously, I got to go back Sunday. And then, got another week of training and putting everything together. I'll spar one more time, and then we fly out to Milwaukee, and that weather's going to be horrible. I already know it's going to be horrible over there.
Yeah, man, down here in Tampa, it's we got a little cold this week, but it's back. It's creeping towards the 80s again.
That Tampa cold, I'm going to take that all day, though, man. That Boston, it's like you get in your car and you scream for like the first 5 minutes. You're like, oh, what am I doing? Like, why am I not back in Tampa or at least Vegas? You know, like, what's going on? But then, you know, it works out, though.
I mean, do you kind of feel it as your career has progressed? Like, you kind of need these switch-ups in the middle of camp just to kind of switch things up a little bit?
Yeah, you know, that grind, you know, I'm like, you know, constantly driving, constantly going to different gyms, and it wears on you a little bit. So, like, it's more of a physical break. Like, I won't spar this week. It'll be more of a, you know, drilling and going over routine. So I won't be sparring this week. And then, you know, like I said, it's a mental break. You know, I get to come out here, get mentally, get away from like the routine and back home, and which is, I think, is one of the best things. You know, like, you can drive yourself crazy doing the same thing over and over and over. So come out here. You know, when I go back, I feel refreshed. I feel rejuvenated, you know, and I'm ready to go. So we'll come back. We get one more week. I'll spar. I believe Wednesday will be my last day sparring. We'll get one more session in as far as sparring and everything else. It'll be, you know, just, you know, maintenance and, you know, tightening up the screws and, you know, getting the weight down. That'll be it.
We're talking on the night of the Ultimate Fighter finale in Las Vegas. Will tonight kind of give you that itch of like, oh, man, I wish tonight was the night we were going in there?
Yeah, no, it's weird. Like, I love going to the fights, but I hate it at the same time because I'm sitting there like, oh, you know, getting that itch, and I want to jump in there, and I try to stay calm, you know, stay calm and just enjoy the fights. But yeah, but it's good also too. It's like motivating. You get in there, you see some wins, you see some things that, you know, especially at a live fight, you know, you see some things like, oh, I might try that, or like you realize, like, hey, man, you know, like if you just got that underhook, you would have been out. So it's fun to, you know, say the fights are always fun, but then when you're out there live, it's even better.
Do you remember the last time you were watching a live fight and you saw someone do a technique and you were just like, okay, I've got to figure out how he did that?
It would definitely be a Calvin Show Combat Zone. I was there, and it was a right hand to the body. He hurt him a little bit, and then he fainted again and came back up with the hook. I was like, okay, yeah. Like, obviously super basic, but like when you see it, and you're like, oh, man, like why am I not doing that? But yeah, it was like he faded. He hit him with a right hand to the body. He faked it again, and it came back up top the left hook. And I was like, wow, that's money, man. That's right up my alley too.
And when it comes to this fight, is there a certain key to victory for you in this one? I mean, is it more about you than him, a little bit of both?
I think it's me fighting for my name. You know, I feel like I was fighting for Sun Sal's name last time. You know, I was trying to fight the big name, and instead of just fighting for fun, you know, when I got back, my wrestling coach was like, listen, you was out there fighting for Sun Sal, not for you. You know, and like, I think if I just go out there and I'm like, have fun. And another thing, like, it's weird. I don't know what it is. I get these bigger fights, and I just, it might sound weird, I almost take it too serious, if that makes sense. Like, it's okay. Like, I get out there, and I'm like, I got to do this, I got to do that. I try to be perfect, and I'm like, no, just go out there and have fun. And, you know, this is another big fight, another big name. It's going to be exciting. You know, I got to go out there, and like I said, fight for my name, and not try to fight, beat up the Pettis name, you know, and just go out there, you know, and earn and learn about the font, you know?
I mean, is that, have you had to deal with that early on in your career where kind of the mental side maybe got to you a little bit?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's that's all it is, really. It's the mental thing, you know. I was getting there, and especially that last one, I felt like he wasn't like better than me. I didn't get beat. Just I felt like the younger fighter, you know. I felt like I got schooled a little bit. Like, it was kind of like, no, it doesn't work that way. Here you go. And they showed me how to, like, this is how you win every exchange and being in on top of every position, or you know, just being in the right position all the time. Like, he was never out of position to not do something that he wanted to do. And if he didn't like it, if he didn't like what he saw, he just walked off. You know, it was just like, I felt like I learned a lot from that. And, you know, it's the veteran move. You know, I felt like I lost to a veteran, and it was kind of like, you know, there you go. And I go back home and learn, you know.
Does those type of losses eat at you?
Yes, you know, the first, like, especially that first 2 weeks, you know, it hurts. You know, obviously it hurts. It sucks. It's hard for me to watch it. Like, obviously we'll break down the film like two times, but it's sickening. Like, I can see in my stomach kind of watch these fights. But you know, we get over it. Like I said, like, fortunately I lost before, so I know how to get over these fights. It just sucks because, like I said, I think I was thinking more of like what could happen if I won this fight instead of just going out there and winning. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm thinking like, obviously title shot, and thinking like, well, you know, whatever could potentially come by winning and beating the number three guy and a guy with that much experience, it was just like, I think I thought about that too much instead of going out there and just having fun and like doing my thing. I know you hear a lot of guys say they'll just go out there and have fun, but like if when I am, like when I'm having fun and like do my thing, and like it just flows so much better. But when I'm in there too tired or trying to be perfect or waiting for the right shot instead of just making things happen, like it just doesn't work out. But yeah, you know, it's just you know, just gotta get that taste out of my mouth and then, you know, and have fun out there.
Has there been times where like you're a round or two into a fight that's, you know, it's a tough fight that you kind of go, man, I'm just not having fun?
No, not yet. It's just more of like a, I don't say like it's more of like I'm thinking too much. I'm trying too hard. I think I'm like, oh, are you trying too hard? You trying too hard? Thinking too much, and then like you're thinking about thinking too much. You know what I'm saying? Like I stop thinking too much, and like it's a slippery slope. Because obviously, like I said, like regardless, obviously you winning and you want to win, but even when you're losing, you're still having fun. But it's just not the fun you want. You know, on your terms. It's more on his terms. You know.
And of course, you're going in his backyard. I mean, do you like that role of going into the opponent's backyard?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's gonna be they're gonna boo me, obviously. But I think they're gonna respect the fight more than just being on his side. They're gonna see I'm here to fight, you know. And, I think you know, there's a lot of pressures on him. But like I said, I fought in Boston. I felt that, you know, like we had three guys on the card with us, so we all felt it. And it was just like, you know, Kyle fought first and he won. They're like, all right, I got to win now. Then it was kind of like, you know, like the pressure's on. Then obviously you have everybody in there. Right? When you walk out, your place is so loud. You can feel it through your soul. It's just so loud. And then you get in there, all right, now it's time to prove, like, why you invited all these people here. Why are they? Because, you know, I'm pretty sure they're going to have him out there doing a lot of media and like, you know, PR type stuff like that. So they're going to be a lot of people that already know him. And then they're going to be new fans or people that are like kind of like coming and just come check him out because they saw him at whatever, you know, they had him doing. So he has to prove like, hey, the reason why I told you to come here is because I'm a great fighter. I'm a winner. He has to prove that. So, you know, definitely the pressure's on him. And, you know, and it's tough. I feel like he's always had that pressure, you know, living up to his brother's name, you know, living to the Pettis name and all that. But now he has to do that and fight in Milwaukee. So there's a lot on him.
It all goes down on December the 15th, of course, live on Fox. You'll see Rob's fight against Sergio Pettis. Rob, man, as always, appreciate time. Let everyone know they can find you on social media and those sponsors to help support you.
Yeah, definitely. I actually got locked out of my original Instagram. So if you don't mind, can you follow me at Rob_Font? Once again, that's Rob_Font. And then Twitter as Rob S. Font and Facebook at Rob Font. But again, that Instagram, Rob_Font. Please go follow that.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that returned to the UFC back at UFC Beijing, scored a victory in the second round, Lewis Smolka. Lewis, as always, man, I appreciate the time. Congratulations on the victory. I'm sure you've gone back and you've probably watched the fight to assess your own performance. Anything stick out to about your performance that you really loved or maybe didn't love?
It wasn't my best, I'm not going to lie. There was like a lot of pressure and like a lot of buildup and emotion going into that. There was a lot on the line, you know. Like I was pretty sure I was gonna have to win that in order to like keep my job and stuff. So I was like, I really didn't want to make a mistake in that one, you know. Like I really needed that win, and it was great to get it. I was so happy. I was so relieved to get it, and I'm so happy it's done.
Was that just the emotions after once you got the victory? It was more of like, all right, I can breathe now.
It was a lot, built up of a lot of things, man. It was definitely that. It was like, you know, missing my kid, you know, thinking about all the sacrifices that her and Yumi have had to make. Like, we've had to make moving out here, switching teams, all that stuff. Like, it was a lot, man. It was a lot just at once. I was so happy to win because it's still a fight, you know. I'm like, okay, I'm happy to win. My career is still going. I still have a shot to make this lifestyle work, you know. And it was so many things at once.
You know, one of the things I was watching earlier you did, and I think a lot of times we don't think about, you know, when you're traveling to another country, especially a country that has pretty strict rules, of how you were scared to bring your CBD with you, which I know a lot of fighters, you know, use. I mean, was that, how did that kind of alter your recovery from, you know, pre-fight and post-fight?
It's definitely a little weirder. I like my CBD and stuff, you know. It just kind of like it keeps me kind of like able to like it keeps the like the swelling, the muscle stiffness, the DOMS. It keeps that like a lot more down. So it's kind of like a bit strange too, because I was trying to, I actually did a bit, little bit of strength and conditioning while I was up there trying to like rebuild my muscles. Cause I took this fight at 35. I thought I was going back to the UFC at 25. So I was keeping myself really skinny, like trying to be ready for like a 125 cut. So when I got back in at 35, I was lifting a little bit, even up there, trying to like rebuild as much muscle as I could just because of the situation. And like, I don't know, my legs are pretty beat up. And like, if I had the CBD to recover, I think that might've made a little bit of a difference. Like I would've been able to like, you know, like walk around a little easier and stuff.
I mean, you talk about how you were initially thinking, hey, I'm going to go back to the UFC as a 25er, and we all know what's going on there. How did you feel a size difference with your opponent in this fight as opposed to other fights?
To be honest, no. Because he'd fought at 25 too, so we're pretty confident in like our frames, and like we knew he'd be long and lanky, so like maybe he'd be a little bigger than me. We're confident he'd be about the same. There wasn't too much of a size difference, but I know like going into other fights, there's gonna be a big size difference, so I have to start like making up that gap.
Is that something where maybe you take a maybe additional month or two before you take your next fight, as opposed to kind of a normal, like, hey, I want to get back here 3 months from now get into a strength and conditioning program?
Definitely. You know, I work with Corey Beasley, and, he knows that he's aware of the situation. He knows we need to put on around, like, 5 to 10 pounds, like, ideally within the next few months. I've talked to the UFC, too, and they're kind of willing to work with me. So, like, yeah, we're not going to feed you to fucking Marlon Moraes, like, tomorrow, you know what I mean? Like, you're not going up against that fucker, like, today, but... they're willing to work with me a little bit. They're not going to throw me to like the huge dudes first, you know. They'll give me a little time to develop, and then it's like, all right, now you got to test the waters against the huge dudes, you know.
But what if a short notice 35 opportunity comes about? I mean, would it be tough to say no if you're like, oh man, I'm trying to build my body, but there's a great opportunity?
It depends on the situation. Depends on the guy. You know, if the dude is huge or whatever, maybe not. Oh, if it's somebody that's like kind of like my size in the same boat as me, yeah, you know, sure, we can test that. You know.
And, of course, you know, now it's a holiday season. I mean, is it more of just trying to, you know, I mean, I know you put the video out of your daughter, and I saw the tweet you had about there's no amount of energy that could ever equal to a 3-year-old trying to ride a horse. But, is that right now for you? It's just about, you know, spending time with the family and, you know, just enjoying life.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just pretty happy, you know, right now. And I'm happy to spend, holidays with my daughter and stuff. Just, you know, like I'm doing like little things with her. Like we're trying to like potty train her, you know, just making her like able to actually brush her own teeth. Just little stuff like that is pretty fun,
you know. And you living in California now, you're with the, you know, team Oyama. They've got some, you know, fighters coming up. I mean, is it more of now just like, hey, I got to be there for my guys too, that, you know, they've been there for getting me ready? I mean, now it's just more about those guys?
Definitely. We actually just wrapped up most of our camps. It's been like a busy year over there with them for the past year. It's been a grind, you know, and I'm definitely gonna come back in to help wherever, but we're almost like done with like a big chunk of like the fight, because Chito just fought in Argentina, I fought last week, and then Alex is fighting this week. So, like, I can't really do too much to help Alex, you know what I mean? Like, I'm gonna go watch his fight this weekend. I'm gonna drive out to Vegas and watch. But that's pretty much all I can really do at this point. You know what I mean? Just support.
Now, are you the type of teammate that just gets super nervous watching your guys fight as opposed to when you're fighting?
It's like straight up worse. Like everybody says it. I kind of agree. Like it's worse. You feel like way more helpless, you know? When it's your fight, you're in control a little bit. You know you're going to move. When it's not your fight, you feel a little helpless watching your friend. But if it's going well, then, you know, you're pretty happy. If you're going well, it's just all hype. But, yeah, you get pretty nervous.
Now, are you the type of teammate, like, in the stands, or, like, you yelling out, or you just kind of sit back and let the coaches kind of, you know, do their thing?
It just depends on the situation. I feel like if the fight is super hyped up, they're going back and forth, I'm over there screaming, you know, whatever I can. But, you know, I mean, it just depends on what's happening. You know, it depends on the vibe.
You know, obviously we've talked about the 125 pound division and kind of where it's at now, but there is a title fight coming up in January of TJ and Henry. I mean, you have any thoughts on that fight of how you think it's going to go down?
It's going to be interesting to see Dillashaw cut, because he's going to lose some of his attributes no matter how he does it. He's going to lose power, he's going to lose cardio, he's going to lose speed. He's going to lose one of the three at least. And so I'm just curious to see how he manages that, because his style kind of revolves around him having all those, like, he's able to explode, he's able to, he gives up size in order to be able to explode, in order to be able to have cardio and to be quick, you know, and to have power. So this time he's going to have size, but he's going to lose one of the three, depending on how he cuts the weight. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most interesting fact, that he's going down to 25 as opposed to Henry going up to 35. When Henry got that win over DJ, were you kind of like the rest of the MMA community and pretty surprised?
I thought he earned it, to be honest, but I was definitely surprised that he actually did it. Like going into the fourth, I was like, oh wow, he might actually pick this up. Like, he might actually get this.
And yeah, now of course DJ over in one championships. You know, but we've got your congratulations on your victory. Look forward to seeing when that next matchup meet. I know you mentioned March. Is that still kind of the timeline ideally for you when you'd like to return?
Yeah, about March, maybe like late February. We still got to figure it out, but somewhere around there would be good.
Let everyone know where they can find you on social media and those sponsors that help support you.
You can find me on Last Samurai UFC on Twitter and IG. And, you know, just thank you to all my sponsors, Terp House, you know, I mentioned CBD. They've been a big part of my recovery. Defend Hoy, my clothing sponsor, first sponsor I've ever had. Virus, they always keep me, you know, in the best gear. Milkandeggs.com, they've been sending me fresh groceries to my door. That's been great. Wow. That's been a huge help. It's like probably one of the better sponsors I have. Defense Soap, keeping me on the mat. Skeevy Underwear, Lace and Loop, they've been keeping me stocked on hand wraps, keeping my gloves good. Who else? I have so many sponsors, but off the top of my head, that's all I got right now. But you know, thank you guys. Thank you, everybody. If I forgot anyone, I'm so sorry.
And there was my conversations with Kyle Bochniak, Brent Primus, Rob Font, and Louis Smoka. I will tell you, Brent Primus telling the story about breaking his training partner's nose and then putting it back into place was just straight up comedy there. Michael Chandler, of course, he'll be on this podcast next week. Interested to talk to Michael about this fight, because that's going to be on Friday night. That'll be on Paramount. Of course, that'll be in Hawaii Saturday, there in Hawaii as well. That fight car will be on DAZN. I would say, so, I cut the cord, and so I now watch Bellator via DAZN. So I was watching the card on Friday night. By the way, did not realize the Saturday card was on like an hour tape delay, Daniel. So I'm sitting on my couch Saturday afternoon. I've got DAZN up on my computer, and I just happened to see like a tweet about, man, I can't believe Big Dan's performance in a Sakara fight, how he let that knockout go longer than it needed to be. And I was like, oh, the fight's not even on DAZN yet. And I'm like, oh, it was like an hour tape delay. Oh, what would have been? I'm like, why are we on an hour tape delay? Really?
It's just dumb.
I mean,
it's just dumb. Yeah. They're not even trying anymore. They're just not even trying. I mean, yeah, that's...
I wasn't bummed out by it. I mean, yeah. But I will say this. So one thing, when you're watching on DAZN, the simulcast or Paramount shows, it's just a straight live feed. You hear the announcers, and I don't know if it was on the Paramount broadcast or not, but during the Rickles Guillerme Bamba fight, after the second round, David Rickles, the head coach, I mean, lights him up. He's like, do you want to win this fight or what?
He goes, you go out there, you take his ass down, and you beat him up. And I'm like, I'm sitting there going, man, I wonder if this is on the Paramount broadcast. Because if not, I'm like, well, you guys are missing some great goddamn content.
I know, and you kind of understand why Rickles is such a crazy personality when he's around himself with those guys. I mean, that's a great corner you want to have. And, man, Bamba certainly looked solid in that fight, but I don't necessarily know if David Rickles needed that. I think he was on his way to a decision victory, and I love it, though. And, man, these two Bellator cards, Jason, not the greatest things in the world for sure, but just, I mean – there is something interesting about like watching Bellator go into a country like Italy and just have everything they want happen not. Yeah, right? Man. Like, and that's what happened in those top two fights.
Dude, I mean, Sakara, that was definitely a brutal knockout. I'll tell you, Bellator 210, watched a good amount of the prelims, was watching some of the prelims in my office, but then had to, you know, take that ride home so I could, you know, enjoy the rest of my night. The Joe Schilling fight, holy cow, he looked amazing. Kudos to Will Morris's corner for stopping that fight, even though Will did not like his corner stopping the fight, but Joe Schilling absolutely brutalized him. You know, Sean Bunch getting the verbal submission against Joe Warren. Joe's not, you know, kind of saying he has one fight left on his Bellator deal. Sounds like he wanted to fight it out, but you got to kind of wonder what Joe, where he's at, kind of what's kind of lies ahead for him. Kochi Yamauchi, the split decision win over Daniel Vaitcha, one of those fights where we have a 30-27 one way and a 30-27 the other way. Jordan Young gets a win as well. Costello defeating Chris Honeycutt, that was a little bit of a surprise there, big win for him. Your main card, you had three decisions, Juan Archuleta, Christina Williams, David Rickles, and John Salter. Getting that submission win, of course, on Friday, we also had the Ultimate Fighter 28 finale. One thing I want to point out was, did you – I'm sure you probably watched this via DVR, right?
Yeah, I did.
So did you watch the Edmund Shahbazyan post-fight interview?
I did not.
He calls out for a performance of the night bonus after that fight.
After that fight?
Yeah.
That's the only reason why we're talking about this fight. I mean, we were not going to talk about Shahbazyan, Darren Stewart.
I was that like, are you kidding me? Dude, no.
Like, come on, Tim Means already has you beat. Joseph Benavidez already has you beat. And we still got like five fights left. That's
even
awful.
Without those fights at once, yeah, the performance of the night type fights.
I know. And Tina Shevchenko has you beat. Yeah, that's
how
that's
did
awful.
Darren Stewart not get the stoppage in the third round? I'm amazed by that. I'm just amazed that he didn't get the stoppage in that one. You know, Kamaru Usman gets a win over RDA. You know, and we I got to play you Dana White, and just to kind of get your thoughts on what Dana White had to say about Kamaru Usman and the potential of him fighting for the welterweight title. So here's Dana White following UFC the Ultimate Fighter 28 finale.
I'd like to see him fight Woodley now after seeing that. Listen, Colby Covington pulled out of the fight, didn't defend his belt, this, that, the whole thing. I'm one of these guys, when I just see a fight like this, you know, I want to see Usman fight now. We'll see what happens, though.
I like to call that just the typical Dana White comment after a fight's over.
Oh, yeah, whoever wins is the next guy to challenge for a title fight. And look, man, Usman certainly deserves it after this performance. He went up against Rafael dos Anjos. I mean, you want to talk about – you talk about how on the Bellator card you had a 30-27 and 27-30. We had a 50-43 and a 48-47. I mean, that's pretty wide as well in terms of the decision. And gosh, Usman just – to me, watching this fight, it just felt like Rafael dos Anjos in five straight rounds never had a moment. He really didn't. I mean, to me, this was just Usman controlling this fight. For RDA, like the best part of this fight for him was defending, keeping himself active on the back. But Kamaru Usman completely had a dominant performance against a former champion. When you contrast the two fights with Covington RDA, Usman RDA, I would give the nod to Usman in terms of what's more impressive. And then when it comes to projecting forward, Usman Woodley, as an MMA fan, Jason, is a fight I'm looking forward to the most. Mm-hmm. But if I'm a businessman, I do think Covington Woodley has more potential at the box office.
Are you saying that Colby Covington might really sell that fight? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. You got to capitalize when the iron's hot because he might just lose his next fight. Like, yeah. I'm going to say Covington talks a little more smack than Usman. And it's not the greatest smack. I mean, it is like unprocessed, gross smack. But Covington did go to the White House. There's that.
I mean, and he was the interim champion.
Yeah, that too. I mean, the only thing people care more about than Covington Woodley, Jason, is obviously The Ultimate Fighter season 28, right?
Oh, God. Man, it's, can this show please just die?
I know. I had no idea who these people were.
Like we said last week, the only people that care about The Ultimate Fighter are the fighters who go on it.
I know, but we had history, man. Oldest Ultimate Fighter winner ever in Juan Espino, 38 years old.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all saw that one coming. Macy Shays on, not nice submission win there in the second round. Also, Valentino's younger sister gets a win in the first fight as well. Kevin Aguilar, Rick Clinton, that was a hell of a fight. If you did not see that fight, go back and try to find that fight. That was a hell of a fight. Joseph Benavidez, gets the win. And okay, so we like to call the old Dana BS meter. All right, I got to play a quote for comment from you. This is Dana White on the flyweight division.
The last thing I want to ask about tonight, Joseph Benavidez made a pretty impassioned plea for the flyweight division. I don't know if you got to see that, you know, after his performance. Can you help us out? I mean, it seems like it's kind of murky. What's going on? What's not going on? I mean, you do have a title fight coming up, but it sounds like the division maybe. Help us understand. What's going on with flyweight?
Yeah, it is murky. It is murky right now. You know, obviously we still have fights going on. Cejudo is going to fight Dillashaw. And we'll just see how this thing plays out. You know, that division is a division that I battled for a very long time and defended and said, are you people crazy? Well, how do you not like these fights? How do you not like the champ? But it never really stuck. It never really became a popular division. So even with such a dominant champion, you know what I mean? Even with an incredibly dominant champion, it didn't do it.
So is it safe to say it is going away at some point?
Are you letting anybody else ask questions here, or are you running this whole thing?
I'm kind of running.
All right. I'm just checking.
That was the last thing that happened.
We'll see how this thing plays out. But there's guys, even if it goes away, guys like Benavidez and guys like that could move up a weight class too, because a lot of those guys cut a lot of weight.
When you say we'll see what happens, is this if Cejudo wins? No,
there's no plan for anything right now. This fight's going to happen with Dillashaw and Cejudo, and then we'll see where we go from there.
All right, Daniel, where's your BS meter?
It's like a 7. No, I'm joking. It's like a 10. It's just so BS. I mean, every Dana White quote is actually a 10. I mean, it is so stupid. Just answer the damn question, and you're basically answering it anyway, but you're just circling around the point. You just don't want the quote that says flyweight division is dead. But when the guy asks you, is the flyweight division dead, basically, and you're like, well, look, we're going to see what happens. We don't have any plans afterwards, but we're just going to see what happens. It's like, gosh. And then he's like, I'm the biggest advocate of the flyweight. Man, if you were the biggest advocate, that division would still be up and running.
If he was the biggest advocate of that division, there would have been way more fights of flyweight fights on UFC main cards.
The only thing he's concerned about is putting Joseph Benavidez in the prelims. That's the only thing Dana White cares about, Jason. That's all I got.
I will say this. They booked Joe B against Figueiredo. That's a great fight. But, I mean, look, I like how Joe B kind of handled the situation. I do know that Alex Perez and his manager, Jason House, are not happy of kind of how everything unfolded in the fight, back of the headshots, whatnot. And E. Levine, just awful job in that fight. But, personally, I was happy Joe B won because I had him on my DraftKings team and made a little money on Friday night with my DraftKings team. But
did you have Pedro Munhoz with his first round victory or Tim Means?
I did not have either one of those guys. They were very pricey. I scored 642 points on that one. The winner got like 700 points. It was crazy. I had Darren Stewart, so that's why maybe I was a little frustrated. You couldn't get the stoppage there in the third round. Let me pull up my lineup. I had Kamaru Usman, who scored a whopping 176 points. Darren Stewart with a wonderful 22 points. Joe B, Juan Espinito, Macy Chazon, and Maurice Green.
Yeah, so you went with the tough 28 guys.
Yeah, but I mean, it was, you had to pay up for Tim Means. You had to pay up. Okay, you mentioned about Pedro Munhoz. After you just beat the guy by strikes, what are you putting your opponent on your shoulders for?
I know.
Like, if I'm Brian Caraway, I'm like, dude, put me down.
Oh, I know. If you want an opponent, it's the guy Kapanen. After he knocked out Sakara, he was like starting to like strengthen his neck or something, or give him a kiss. It was interesting. Yeah. We saw the dichotomy of what you want and what you don't want after you get finished.
Man, poor Brian Caraway. Man,
poor Brian. Yeah, that was just a bad loss for him. But I mean, he was facing such a talented guy in Pedro Jimenez. It's not something you should beat yourself up over with. But gosh, that was a tough loss.
Also, one of the highlights had to be the way Roosevelt Roberts guillotined Daryl Horcher against the fence. Like he had Daryl Horcher in this unique like guillotine him up against the fence and. Ooh, that was kind of bad. But yeah, you mentioned Tim Means with that knockout. Also, Hani Barcelos gets a win. Leah lets it. Maurice Green, the win over Michelle Batista. I felt like the submission was like in slow motion. Like he was in a jiu-jitsu class and they're like, okay, put the arm here, put the arm there. I was like, Batista like had no, like, it's like he had no idea how to defend the choke.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're going to get that at heavyweight MMA. If you got a guy on his back locking on a submission and it's a heavyweight fight, chances are it's going to look like you're playing it at half speed, for sure. But you're right. That was egregious.
I think the stat was that's like the third triangle choke in UFC heavyweight history.
Wow.
Stephen Struve had the other two.
That's nuts. That's a great quote. Yeah, remember that time we had like the inverted triangle craze in Bellator and
Hey, so on Saturday night we had JDS get the win over Tada Tuivasa. How should we preface this? Okay, JDS has won three of his last four, or JDS has won two consecutive fights for the first time since 2011-2012.
Yeah, that's a great way. I would probably go with the latter. I really would. That's a great way to put it, Jason. And I would go with the latter, but I think it kind of shows you, hey, man, JDS is still up and kicking. I mean, this was a fun heavyweight fight, and it was back and forth. I mean, the top two fights were back and forth. Just like the first round was in favor of the guy who ultimately lost, and then, you know, JDS rebounded. I mean, for JDS, here's the good side. He got touched a lot by Tuivasa, and he didn't get finished. He stayed in the pocket, his chin solid, and he took the offense, returned firepower with his counters, ultimately got the finish for Junior Dos Santos. That's kind of, other than just a dominant, like he just comes in and just looks flawless type performance, this is something you really get enthused about because he took somewhat of a beating in that first round against Tuivasa, and he was able to get the second round finish.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of fights there for JDS. I think kind of in a way you look at Tuivasa as a guy that, you know, still, you know, kind of developing, obviously was not a good night, you know, for the guys from down under with you know, Tua losing, Tyson losing, and Mark Hunt. I mean, Shogun Hua, like, if for some reason Gustafsson does not make it to 232, would it – I'd all be surprised if the UFC goes – hey, guys, let's strike while the iron's hot. Let's put Shogun Hua against John Jones.
Yes.
It's not possible. That crazy to sit there and say Shogun Hua could be fighting for a light heavyweight title in 2019.
No, he went out there. He beat Tyson Pedro. You know, absolutely. The UFC's going to catch. Because the thing is, if the UFC makes that fight, they know one thing's going to happen. John Jones is going to look impressive. And he's going to look impressive against a guy with a name. They know that. They're greedy. They're going to go after it. But, hey, man, Shogun Hua was the one winning the fights, and he did it against Tyson Pedro. I mean, this was no – this was a tough opponent. And just – you got to watch the first round to figure out why. But Hua rebounded, got the victory, and I don't think he's going to get a light heavyweight championship fight. But he's definitely in that Andre Arlovsky zone. We saw Arlovsky in late in his heavyweight run in that, oh, my gosh, he's won this fight. He's won this fight. Time to think about him as a – title challenger.
Oh, it's totally a UFC move to give him a title shot at this point.
Totally.
I mean, if we're talking about Anderson Silva wins in February, he's getting a middleweight title shot?
Yeah. I mean, might as well book Shogun and Anderson.
When I saw that, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, that's about the only response you could have.
It's so lame, especially when, you know, Silva talked about how he didn't really care about titles anymore. But yeah.
By the way, there's no reason for you to go back and watch Justin Willis, Mark Hunt, if you've not watched that. Also, so, you know, Mark Hunt, final fight in the UFC, you know, and, you know, Ryzen seems to be the I guess the one that makes most sense. But if you're Mark Hunt and you've got this lawsuit about the UFC and related to, hey, I'm always fighting guys on steroids, are you kind of contradicting yourself by going to Ryzen?
Well, no, because he's fighting guys on steroids, but they're not very good guys. That's it. But you're totally right. I mean, you're talking about guys who are juicing. That's a great place to juice.
Yeah, and, I'm pretty sure to say. I think it's safe to say there is no drug testing going on in Ryzen.
Absolutely. There is more drug testing going at where I work than in Ryzen.
By the way, man, I love that Darian Caldwell, Koji Horiguchi, Bellator send their guy over to claim the title. I love that, man. I think that's awesome. I think it'll probably on New Year's Eve, it might get me up to watch those fights.
Hell, I'm going to watch those fights, man. I love New Year's Eve MMA. I'm going to watch those fights. I'm going to watch them live. You know, I'm psyched. And that tells you how not interesting the prelims were for Dos Santos Tuivasa that we're already moving on. I mean, there was not much.
No.
Right? Like what? I mean, I guess the one thing was, I mean, it's not on the prelims, but Konchenko's win, Rocco Martin beating Matthews. That was a nice little finish. And then, like, Jimmy Crute tapping out Paul Craig super late. So,
I mean,
dude, yeah, this card was not doing it. Me.
Yusef looking great. Mukhtarian, like, you know, looking at ref going, why are you stopping the fight? I don't know, because he's just railing on you. I watched this fight card via DVR, and when I see him protesting a stoppage, I'm like, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally agree with you.
Jim Crute, I mean, I knew he had won by Kimura. But then it was, I thought, you know, when you start watching the fight, he hasn't, you know, he's got the triangle, you know, arm triangle on the ground. I'm like, okay, that's where the submission comes in. Nope. And then, you know, Paul Craig has a good second round, and then Jim wins it. I mean, obviously someone to pay attention to there. But, yeah, it's a lot of decisions. All the fights on the prelims went to a decision. You know, by the way, speaking of some news by the UFC. Sage Northcutt is now a one championship fighter. And once again, it's time to play the game of Daniel's Dana White BS meter, as Dana White was asked about Sage Northcutt signing with one championship.
I just want to ask about Sage Northcutt. He signed with one championship tonight. Can you just explain the logic there? Because, I mean, I get, you know, why some people, he's a young guy, popular, marketable.
No, but there's obviously a ton of logic to it. But at the end of the day, I like Sage Northcutt very much. There's something wrong with you if you don't like Sage Northcutt. You know, he's the nicest kid in the world. So I know that when I just did the podcast, it came off, like I said, he's young, he's this and that. There's a lot of reasons. Now, you guys all know me. You know, when I usually release somebody, I'm usually right. All right? And I don't want to badmouth the kid. I don't even sound like I'm badmouthing the kid. I love the kid. I wish him the best. And, you know, it's just, and we didn't cut him. I saw things. His contract was over. So we let him go.
I mean, was he just asking for ridiculous money?
No, it's not even about that. It was the right move. It was the right move for me. And I know it was the right move for him.
All right, Daniel. There is so much to take in there. Dana White, we released him. No, you did. Okay. In a way, you could say you released him. Well, A, his contract expired. And let's just call it what it really is. One championship offered him money we weren't willing to pay.
He almost told the truth there. Did you hear it? He said, his contract is over. Period. He was so uncomfortable. He was so uncomfortable admitting that his contract is over. We released him right after.
We all know how MMA contract works. No, you had a chance to match it. You chose not to match it. Well, why would you not match it? The reason would be is they offered him more money than you were willing to pay, Sage. God bless Sage Northcutt, because, I mean, he's likely going to wreck shop over there.
Oh, he is. And this guy's won 3 fights in a row for the UFC. That's all they want, man. He was their wet dream. Like, he really was. I mean, they put this guy up against fighters who just weren't super great, and they wanted to show. I mean, gosh, it's so dumb. I mean, this was their golden child. The problem is the UFC doesn't want to spend money on fighters. They don't want to go and spend more than they want on these guys. They're trying to cut costs because they're running a show every single week. So that's why they didn't sign him. Look, this is just like, I mean, release. Get out of here. The BS meter's on full level. I mean, he almost admitted the truth. He almost was going to be like, yeah, I mean, he just left and we didn't want to match. But I mean, it's like if a contract ending is a release, like what's your favorite release? Like what, the Cleveland Cavaliers released LeBron James when he went to the Miami Heat? I mean, it's just dumb. It's just dumb. I mean, at the end of the day, ONE FC is going to overpay for fighters. And I hate using the word overpay because it's nice that these guys are getting paychecks, right? Like overpay connotates that these guys are getting more than they deserve, which is not the case. I mean, these guys are fighters. But yeah, in the marketscape, ONE FC is going to overpay to get these guys under contract to make their promotion more relevant. And the UFC just didn't pay it because they're cutting cost, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, hey, look, God bless Sage Northcutt. I mean, look, he's going to fight over there for a couple years, and I'm sure once he hit the free agent market again, you know, he'll probably have a continue to have a great record. I mean, what, he's only, what, 22 years old right now? I mean,
he's going to come back. He's going to come back, and he's going to make a lot of money.
So it was revealed on Wednesday night by Errol Hawani that we now have a main event for the UFC debut on ESPN. It's going to be Henry Cejudo versus TJ Dillashaw, moving that from the pay-per-view. Kind of the word you get is basically the UFC was in scramble mode because obviously they needed a marquee fight for their debut on ESPN. But obviously the big story on Wednesday was Greg Hardy, who we all know was, you know, he was a UFC fighter. You know, he was just fighting on regional scenes, but he has been booked against Alan Crowder, a part of that card, which obviously he's on this card because of, you know, to potentially bring viewers to the ESPN that night. Because, look, ESPN is hoping that this UFC deal is going to just, you know, bring hundreds of thousands of new subscribers to ESPN+. But here's my question, Daniel. Was there one person in the UFC office that goes, hey, guys, I think this is not a good idea?
I'm sure there has to be because this is a stupid idea. Look, I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, first, let's talk about the juxtaposition. Everyone pointed it out. Ariel pointed it out. Rachel Ostovich is on this card.
Mm-hmm.
A victim of the crime Greg Hardy did.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's just like, how do you go and run a video package about what Rachel Ostovich has overcome and then do a Greg Hardy fight or vice versa? It's just – but here's my point about Greg Hardy, Jason. I don't feel comfortable about him being in the UFC. I don't feel comfortable about him fighting in MMA. I don't like this. I don't want it to happen.
That's been my point all along. I haven't liked the fact that, you know, he's being trained to fight. I've never liked this. Look, I understand why the UFC brought him in. And I think everyone listening understands why he was brought in. He was brought in to bring television ratings. That's the reality of this.
Yeah, he was, and he's going to, I think, and he's whatever, he's fine, he's a fine fighter, he's showcased potential, but it's just like, dude, like at some point, it just becomes like, stop giving people chances after they do stuff like that to people.
TV controls a lot of what happens in sports. You know, I would wonder what ESPN thinks of this. My guess is ESPN knew that Greg Hardy was going to be on this card before it ever went public knowledge. I mean, look, the reason Michael Page versus Paul Daly is happening in the United States is because of DAZN and television. They want that card in prime time in the United States.
ESPN has their fingerprints all over this card. The reason why we're getting Cejudo Dillashaw, the reason why we're getting Greg Hardy, ESPN has his fingerprints on there. And there's a great irony of this network that just championed that just destroyed Greg Hardy, which they should have at the time, and then now they put him on the card to benefit, just like the NFL attempted to do. It's just, yeah, it sucks, man. Like regardless if he's on the same card to Ostovich, which is just awful, tone deaf. He shouldn't be fight. Like I just don't want to watch a fight. I don't want him to be profiting off the sport. Like it's just like, dude, like not to get super not to get super like real or whatever, but like, dude, it sucks, man. If you're like, so often these celebrity men or real men beat up women and they don't get consequences, and there's just an outrageous rate of men who beat up or intimidate or are possessive of women. Like, culture is super messed up, super awful. So the thing is, like, whenever these things happen in the celebrity spotlight and we all have our eyeballs on it, I think it's important that when we see somebody do that, they get punished. So we, like, I don't know, man. It just sucks.
I hate it.
Yeah. And we're going to be talking about it. And the thing is, the dude's kind of good at fighting, too. He's going to be around.
He's going to beat Allen Crowder.
Yeah. And the thing is, here's my last point. I don't think this fight happens on ESPN+. I don't. I think the outrage is going to get too much.
I don't know. I think it ends up on ESPN.
I think there's
people that, you know what, if it's going to bring ratings, they'll take the bad publicity.
Yeah, I think so.
When it comes to the Michael Page Paul Daly fight being at Mohegan and not being in London, I mean, look, I understand the outrage that some people will have. Hey, and when I first kind of started hearing rumblings of this, that was my initial thought of like, whoa, you're not doing that fight in London. You're stupid. But then you had to think about it. And as someone who has dealt with broadcast rights and kind of understands what these are in these contracts, I was like, okay, not hard to figure out. Not hard to figure out that DAZN wants this fight in the U.S. and not in the U.K. because of, you know, hey, they have a U.S. exclusive. And so it makes all the sense in the world. I understand the frustration for the UK fan. They're not getting this fight, but not hard to figure out why this fight's in the US and not in the UK. You may not like it, but this is the fact. Television runs sports broadcasting.
Money runs sports broadcasting.
Yes.
And all the money is coming from the rights fees. Mm-hmm. It's coming from DAZN unwinding its wallet and just putting it on the card, on the credit card. Money runs it. It sucks because you're right, man. I wanted to see that Daly Page fight in the England environment. That would have made the broadcast feel special. But DAZN has a lot of influence, and from DAZN's perspective, it does make sense. So yeah, my general takeaway, I'm glad you explained it because like on its face, you're like, this is stupid, but it makes sense why it's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you this. I mean, DAZN is adding – it seems like they're adding product all the time. By the way, come on Friday night, they've got the Copa Combate card. Do have some interviews up on the MMAReport.com. One guy who is now off the card, Evan Solario, who's actually a local police officer out in Fresno. He's off this card due to injury. Also, you have Paul Elizondo taped an interview with him, so you can look forward to that. That'll be coming up on Friday night. Then on Saturday, they've got boxing, MMA, EFC, Extreme Fighting Championships on there. So DAZN definitely, they're doing what they can to add some value of it. And it's the way I watch Bellator product at this time. But yeah, it's, at the end of the day, TV controls everything. And you also have to remember, DAZN's paying a lot of money to Bellator every year. And the other part of this is, they have the exclusive rights to all of the welterweight tournament fights.
That's interesting. How is that, like, a part of the contract?
Oh yeah, it's part of the deal. They have the exclusive on all the tournament fights.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So interesting way to. I'm glad you broke it down like that because it is important to look at the landscape. And again, it's like these, like, okay, so when you look at combat sports over time, so much of the revenue in the olden days was generated based on the house, the gate, people coming in for attendance. And now moving forward, man, it's almost like you could play out these fights in front of a studio audience because the concern is just signing those TV deals.
By the way, let me ask you, which belts or heavyweight fight in February are you more interested in? Vitaly Minnikov versus Chet Congo or Roy Nelson versus Mirko Krokop?
Vitaly Minnikov, barely, just because he's a good fighter, and so is Congo. But that fight's going to suck. Krokop Nelson is probably going to be more entertaining. Like, he got some old dudes that are just going to throw some haymakers and head kicks. I mean, it probably won't be a head kick. It might be a shoulder kick, but you know, he may not be able to get all the way up to Roy's head. Which one are you looking forward to? Which Dynamite heavyweight fight are you more ecstatic about?
I would say Minakov Kongo. I mean, Kongo has been much more exciting in his past couple fights.
It's true.
It's like something was said to him, like, "Hey, dude, if you don't bring the entertainment value back, you ain't going to be here much longer."
I know. By the way, the more I think about it, I think Sean Shelby is probably like the worst like guy to break up with. I feel like he says really mean things to you when you break up in a relationship, telling his ex-girl, "You'll never be in the UFC."
Couldn't you always say that about any MMA matchmaker that, you know,
Joseph was the type of guy who just ghosts you. He just locks your number and doesn't respond and leaves you wanting more.
By the way, I will tell you, you know, all these robocalls, I have AT&T. Now, like, it's like when these robocalls come in, it's like you get the alert like, probably fraudulent call.
Thank God. Thank God they're fixing it. Thank God they're fixing it for the old grandmas anyway out there.
Man. Yeah, it's scary. To me, it's more scary of how many people likely fall for that.
I know. But you're out here fighting the good fight, Jason.
I'm out here. By the way, speaking of MMA this weekend, we've got LFA on Friday. Later today, I'm going to have an interview up on the AmiraPort.com as I talk to Bobby Lee, who's going to be a part of that main card. He's going to be taking on DeMarcus Jackson, also give you some other content that's currently up on the AmiraPort.com. Did an interview with Leah Letson as she talked about her experience on the Ultimate Fighter and her win at the Ultimate Fighter finale. Also, tell you I've got a couple of Bellator interviews lined up. Talked to Derek Campos, so you can check that out. Got Zach Otto on next week's podcast. I've talked to Walt Harris, Adam Milstead. So be on the lookout for all those interviews come up here in the next couple of weeks here on the MMA Report podcast. I'll tell you, I did that interview with Walt Harris during the Alabama-Georgia game. And there was one time in the interview, it basically kind of stopped because a big play happened. And we were kind of joking the fact that I had the game on in the other room and I could hear what was going on. So so definitely a little insight into that interview. So look forward to that. Of course, if you're not subscribed to this show, do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. We promise we will have a podcast next Wednesday. Unfortunately, my schedule, Daniel's schedule, is kind of didn't work out for Wednesday this week, but we'll be back Wednesday of next week. And just kind of recap, I'm going Holloway, and Daniel, you're going with Ortega, right?
Absolutely. We're both going to Shevchenko.
Hey, okay. That means congratulations, Yoni and Jacek. You're the new UFC Women's Flyweight Champion.
The greatest women fighter of all time.
Yeah, I think there would be a – if she wins, I think there'll be at least two or three women's fighters that go, "I don't know about that one. I don't know." Like, we kind of forget, like, we talk about how great Shevchenko, Yoni, and Jacek is. You know what everyone's kind of forgot about?
What's that?
3 weeks is Amanda Nunes versus Chris Cyborg.
That is literally the fight to determine the GOAT.
Like, I was thinking about that. I was like, oh, we're talking about how great this women's fight is. And I'm like, everyone has completely forgot that 3 weeks from now, we've got Cyborg and Nunes and Jones Gustafsson. Like, everyone's, like, we live such in the now that we forget about, oh, hey, by the way, 3 weeks later, there's even a, you know, probably a, you know, I mean, Ortega Holloway is a great fight. But, you know, 232, that's a great 1-2 punch combination as well.
Yeah, if UFC 231 is Outback Steakhouse, UFC 232, Jason, you got to break out the check. It's a Ruth Chris Steakhouse right there.
Oh, a Ruth Chris Steak, that's a good steak, man. Good steak. Very pricey. Good steak, though.
Thank you. Thank you for all the listeners helping us afford the Ruth Chris Drake meal every once in a while.
All right. Well, that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, you can always check out this podcast, RadioForce.com, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play.
This is a Rush the Field quick fix on Radio Influence.
USC is hiring Cliff Kingsbury to be their new offensive coordinator. This was something that was rumored to happen, but I thought Cliff Kingsbury would maybe leave himself open to possibly going to the NFL, but it seems like USC was the place that he wanted to be. Ultimately, he's going to be their offensive coordinator, and who knows, maybe their head coach in waiting. We'll see what happens. But Kingsbury to USC, you like that decision?
First of all, on the NFL situation, he did talk to a couple of people, but remember the NFL coaching cycle is behind the college football cycle, yes. Obviously, with the season. So, like, for example, there was some conversations with Sean McVay about him coming on board as a consultant. So let's just say, you know, Zach Taylor off the Rams staff gets one of these jobs. Maybe it's the Packer job or some other job that opens up. Then, you know, I think the conversations were along the lines, if you come here as a consultant and, you know, maybe we've got a bigger role for you if one of our guys like Zach moves on. But if he doesn't move on, then you're kind of there as a consultant. So what it really came down to is a bird in a hand better than two in a bush, right? I mean, he didn't have – no one was in a position to offer him an offensive coordinator job in the NFL right now. And while there was some interest, and I think there potentially could be one, the USC job is a good one, something that intrigues him. So as you mentioned, last week the offer was made, and he wanted to explore a couple of NFL opportunities, and that's where we are now. So he gets the job. Now, let me say this, Scott. I think Cliff is really good young coach with good, bright ideas. I don't know that I see this as good a fit as other people do. I think that his style, and he's from the Mike Leach tree, you know, I see USC, and when I look at USC's problems, I see that they don't look like they have been. They've got some talent there, but for USC, they need to be big, strong, and physical on both sides of the line of scrimmage. They should be the Clemson, the Ohio State, the Alabama, the Georgia of the West Coast, Scott.
Rush the Field with Scott Seidenberg and Chris Landry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.